Let me tell you about the new sports app we've launched as a part of our USA Today family. USA Today Sports Plus is the new sports app that puts the fans first. Get the latest scores, stats, and standings and enjoy interactive experiences with our award-winning sports writers. Download the USA Today Sports Plus app from the Apple or Google Play stores today. USA Today Sports Plus. Fan harder.
Hello and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am Joel A. Erickson. I'm joined, as always, by fellow Colts insider, Nate Atkins. Kind of right here at the end, mandatory minicamp is next week. The OTAs are getting wrapped up. We've seen two practices now. The way they're doing practices now, sort of as a acknowledgement to the players of some of their concerns, is that 7-on-7, they're going somewhat close to full speed. They're not really doing any of that in 11-on-11, so there's not a whole lot you can glean from like any of the offensive or defensive line play. I did the other day, I don't know why, it was like muscle memory or something. I charted every throw from all the quarterbacks in 7-on-7, but I don't. Long-time Indy Star readers will know that when we get to training camp and I'm doing observations, I don't use 7-on-7. Number one, because I'm off watching the individual pass rush drills, and number two, because the defense is at a disadvantage, namely that the quarterback can just stand where he wants to be and make whatever throw he wants to make and doesn't have to navigate any pocket or anybody in the way or anything like that.
I was just going to say, it kind of reminds me of this Brian Billick quote. He was talking about preseason football, but he said, you can't tell who can play in preseason, but you can tell who can't play. So, like, if the offense looks terrible in 7-on-7, that is telling. But, yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah, like, the quarterback can't do anything. Right.
Yeah. If they succeed, it's like, well, they're built to. So it's more like it's confirmation bias in a way.
Well, and with veteran quarterbacks, too. So part of the reason, like, I started – one other thing podcast listeners know is that I started out in the NFL covering Drew Brees, and my coworker and I there never charted 7-on-7 because, like, when a quarterback is experienced and accurate and knows where everything is supposed to go, the ball doesn't really hit the ground very often in 7-on-7 unless they want to start taking chances. And just to illustrate that point, Matt Ryan completed his first 13 in practice yesterday. Which is mildly impressive, but also not, because again, there's no pass rush. There's nothing to throw through. There's not even the hint of a quote unquote sack. So that's kind of why I don't really put too much into it, but I think you were pointing out before this podcast started, there are some things that after talking to people for months now about the offseason program that you can glean from what's been going on.
Yeah, and I think with Matt Ryan especially, it's just sort of the lift he's given to the building. We were talking about this like a week ago or so, but like it's amazing that just the vibe this team has right now. Just like how guys, I mean, we talked about like Braden Smith came into the interview room is like cracking jokes about his short arms, like stuff that you never really see out of these guys. Like Paris Campbell just going on and on about, the dark spot he's in and how he got out of it. It's like the interviews this time of year are usually very vanilla, and these guys just seem so uplifted right now. And some of it's the time of year and the chance to flush Jacksonville, but I think it absolutely is the guy in the building and what he's doing at that quarterback position. And we're getting some anecdotes as we go along. You know, he made a presentation, PowerPoint presentation to the team on how to be a good teammate. Like that was something new that I don't think they really saw that position for a couple of years. And then also like Mo Alie-Cox said yesterday that Matt Ryan approaches players in the hallway to quiz them about their assignments on different plays. So then he can call those plays in practice and kind of see if they do what they said they know, like, is their muscle memory catching up to what's in their head? And what I've heard is that's exactly what he did in Atlanta. And he's just brought that right over. And you know, there's so many comparisons guys are making to, you know, it's like it's a different one each time, but it's either Phillip Rivers or Reggie Wayne said Peyton Manning or Mo Alie-Cox yesterday said Andrew Luck. Like they keep going back to the standard of quarterback that has been here that they really noticed when it's not here like last year. And they're all the names that Matt Ryan mentioned his very first day on the job. It feels incredibly intentional. And I keep going back to the story that you wrote about how Peyton Manning kind of laid the groundwork, the seeds for Matt Ryan to come here. It feels like that is very front of mind to Matt Ryan every single day of living up to this standard and creating, you know, his own persona in the building right away and not just assuming people, oh, they watched me growing up, so they'll all inherently trust me. There's stuff day to day right now that makes this process, I think, a lot more interesting than otherwise I would give it credit for, because when you just look at 7-on-7 and, you know, routes on air and guys in shorts, it doesn't blow your mind. But when you understand the process they're building right now, you start to understand why Frank Reich loves this part time of year and why players feel like they're getting something out of it.
Yeah. Ryan has kind of modeled his leadership style his entire career after Peyton, which was also a part of that story. And it does seem now that we've had a couple of these guys come through here. You know, there's obviously the history that Reich has with Peyton. So we have his understanding. Philip Rivers came through here, another guy who's, you know, in the top 10 of most career passing. There's some through lines that you're starting to see, like you were mentioning. And we kind of, the interesting thing is that, like, some of the stuff that's come up isn't stuff that is stuff that, like Carson Wentz tried to do too, you know, like throwing to, you know, organizing throwing sessions that weren't part of OTAs and stuff like that. Like he did that a lot with Pittman and Patman and guys here in Indy, that kind of thing. But there's more that has to be done and more that has to kind of go on. And I think that that's some of the stuff we're hearing about, that maybe some people just don't know how to do as well, you know, or haven't learned how to do as well. I know actually, you know, this isn't a cult specific person, but, Aaron Rodgers is also sort of famous for like quizzing people, both like backup quarterbacks and receivers, you know, in Packers meeting rooms. You know, this is like one of those things that people just like, if you're a great quarterback who understands the offense, you just sort of force everyone to come up to your level, in terms of your understanding of the offense, and that helps going forward. It's going to help going forward. It's definitely going to help. They have such a young receiver room. I think that definitely helps those guys in terms of their development. We've heard over and over again now for years that Reich's offense is fairly complex, even for an NFL offense, especially for a wide receiver, and that sometimes guys have had trouble learning that. Well, you know, like one of the years that, like Michael Pittman had a decent rookie season and he had Philip Rivers there to help him along, you know, and really kind of bounced back from what started out as kind of a nondescript training camp to have a pretty good year by the end of it, you know? So I think that's going to help them with some of these young receivers, just having a quarterback there who continues to quiz them on the details and the intricacies and the adjustments that they have to make that have tripped other guys up in the past.
Yeah, and it's just interesting to see Matt Ryan be so kind of secure in who he is and how he's got to win these days. Like, everything for him has to be about that mental advantage. Like, he's working overtime right now. Like, Mo Alley, I think, was the one who mentioned, like, he's still learning the playbook too, but he's just kind of like in hyper speed right now because that has to become his advantage. That's how Tom Brady's winning. That's how Aaron Rodgers in a lot of ways is winning. When you're some of the physical skills diminish a little bit, that has to be your route. But the other thing with Matt Ryan that's interesting to me is, like, there's been this talk about, like, does he still have it physically? What's he lost? You talk to people who've, like, watched him, and we've watched him his career. Like, he never had that much. Like, he was not this blow-away prospect coming out of college at Boston College who had, you know, a rocket arm. He'd never had the mobility. He's got good size, but he's not the sturdiest build. He's not Josh Allen. Like, he's had to play this way his whole career to some level anyway. And I think that allows players, I've always thought that allows players to have a longer shelf life as who they are in the peak versions of themselves than someone that relies on speed and athleticism. And you look at some examples, like the way the bottom fell out on Cam Newton, the moment that, you know, he started to lose a little bit through the injuries. We'll see with Russell Wilson. He's trying to adjust to be more of a pocket passer, but that's not the way he's ever played. Michael Vick and Donovan McNabb fell off a cliff once they were no longer able to scramble around. But then you have a guy like Tom Brady who never seems to drop off at all. But again, he never relied on those elite athletic traits. He relied on on his brain and his understanding and his accuracy. And we're seeing that with Matt Ryan, and he seems to be taking it like the ball. Everyone keeps saying the ball comes out so quick right now, and it's different. Part of it's jarring because it's different than how they played last year. But part of it's like Matt Ryan's not messing around. He's not here to take hits. He's not here to hold the ball and make something happen. He's never been that guy, but he's especially not going to be that guy now that he's 37. He is here to get the ball to you immediately. And what has to happen here is they've got to understand kind of what the mismatches are pre-snap, and then go to those players. And that's the part that's intriguing right now, is when they come out and they line up with their moments when they have, they'll have two tight ends out there who are at least 6'7", and they've got, Alec Pierce and Michael Pittman, who are both at least 6'3". And then you've got Nyheim Hines, who's that like 5'9" guy who's sometimes in the slot, sometimes in the backfield. There's some cool creative things they're doing. What they've got to do, though, is they got to catch everyone else up mentally. And that's been the part that's kind of coming along, is when the ball does hit the ground right now, it's almost always because it's either a drop or it's a route run a little too shallow, or you are seeing some youth out there right now. Again, it's early. That's fine right now, but it'll be interesting to see how they react to that. Do they bank on Matt Ryan to lift those boats all season long, or they go out and complement it with a veteran?
One of the things that's interesting about Ryan and getting the ball out quickly is that if you look at his time to throw in Atlanta the last couple of years, like it's fine, middle of the packish, but it's not like when Rivers came here, we all knew the ball was coming out fast because Philip Rivers for years and years and years had been a top five, top 10 ball comes out of his hand quicker than anybody else type of thing. But I got some information from within the Colts whenever they made the trade for Matt Ryan in terms of why that was, why his time to throw wasn't as far down. Could he do the quick game stuff? And basically was the offense didn't ask him to. The way the Falcons play offense doesn't ask the quarterback to, or it's not as easy for the quarterback to get the ball out of his hands quickly. It was a schematic thing. And the intention from the Colts has always been, from the moment they got Matt Ryan, was to get the ball out of his hands quick. And really, that goes back to all the way back to Andrew Luck. If you go back and look at Andrew Luck's time to throw in 2018 with Frank Reich, he's, I think, in the top 10 or close to it in terms of where he was time to throw. Now Jacoby Brissett and Carson Wentz couldn't figure out how to get there, but that's the intent of this offense, is to get the ball out quickly. And they're going to do some of the stuff that Ryan did, some of the play action stuff where the ball doesn't come out quite as fast, but they've always believed that significant difference there was between Ryan last year and Rivers in 2019 or 2020, I should say, had more to do with the Falcons scheme than it did with the quarterback himself.
Yeah, no doubt. When we had Will McFadden from the Falcoholic on here a few weeks ago, if you want to go back and listen to that interview, he gave a kind of great breakdown of the different systems that Ryan's lived in. He's, early in his career, he played in sort of an offense that was all about protecting the quarterback, that relied on maybe not the quickest reads, but going through progressions and being accurate. And then under Kyle Shanahan, that was where it was more hold the ball because of all that play action. And then under Dirk Cutter for a few years, and he went away from that. Then he went right back into it with Arthur Smith last year with that kind of wide zone play action approach. And that's the thing. We can't fully judge that, how much that's going to be part of the Colts offense yet, because obviously they don't run a lot of play action right now. There's not really a point to it. The offensive line's not out there anyway. So I'm sure that will be part of this. That's why you have Jonathan Taylor. That's why you mix these two. But I think what I glean from a lot of this is that Matt Ryan's, I think the clock's going to speed up a little bit more, and maybe it takes a little bit of time. Maybe he has to get the playbook down, the chemistry down to fully get there. But I just think at his age, he's taken too many hits the past few years. Like, he has been among the sack leaders because Atlanta has, part of it is he holds the ball a little bit, but really it's because the middle of their offensive line's a mess. He's got to get that number down. And Frank Reich's been great at that with quarterbacks. And I think part of it is that the quarterback knows where to go with the ball and gets it out quickly. And I think that's going to be the game here. And again, it's still, to me, all comes down to whether these pieces around him can deliver. Can they stay on the field? Can they be ready? And I go back and forth when I watch these, because some things are very intriguing. Like Paris Campbell is a huge, huge factor right now, getting the ball in a lot of different places. At one point, he's caught three straight touchdowns yesterday in red zone. Again, these are easy settings for the offense, but it shows you how involved he is. And he just looks smooth and in tune. And like, he looks mentally a lot further along than some of the other guys that Ryan's working with specifically after plays and talking to about their routes. Again, can he stay on the field? That's the big question. And then how do any of these guys, Alec Pierce, a guy like that who's never played, how do these guys react to looks they're never going to see this time of year, press coverage and safety cloud coverage and all these different things that coordinators will do. I think the hope for the Colts is that Michael Pittman's the guy who gets that, who's got some experience, who's they hope growing into a number one receiver, but it is risky. I mean, they're putting a lot on this idea that Matt Ryan's going to get everybody right when there are certain things that he can't possibly work through right now. So I'm just curious to see how that all plays out. They've got some very intriguing elements in the passing game. They don't have experience, but the thing to me though is that, like, everything I thought would fit for Matt Ryan with this offense, I'm feeling that more and more now between the guy that we see in the building day to day and just that approach throwing the ball. And this time of year, I love, like, the one thing I do love is just being close enough to kind of see and hear the way that a ball comes out of a quarterback's arm. And Matthew Stafford in Detroit, it was a joy to watch because it's about the most rocket fire release you're ever going to see. With Matt Ryan, it's different. It's just so accurate and smooth. The deep ball, it may not be the furthest deep ball you'll see, but it is right in the breadbasket. And you notice a difference when Nick Foles or Sam Ehlinger come in there. It does not have the same zip. It doesn't have the same decisiveness. So it's been fun to watch so far. And I'm just curious to see how quickly the receivers catch up to that guy.
Yep. And so much of it we'll find out in training camp, you know, as much as, you know, you made this point before we came on the podcast, but like so much of what we're talking about right now is stuff that ends up either ironing itself out through training camp or fixing it. Like you mentioned, the story you mentioned was Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah. A year ago at this time, all the headlines were Ja'Marr Chase can't catch a football, all these drop issues. And really looking back on it, it's really silly because that was a guy who took a year off football and is playing in the NFL for the first time. And like, this is the time of year to work through some of these things. And so, like, I noticed a moment yesterday with Matt Ryan, and this is way different than Ja'Marr Chase, but just an example is that Ashton Doolin ran into another receiver on a crossing route. Matt Ryan threw the ball. It was one of the few times where, like, Matt Ryan threw it into danger, and then you realize, well, two guys didn't run the route properly. And it was clearly Doolin who, in that just moment, you know, didn't run it quite the way Matt Ryan wanted. And Ryan went right over to him, explains the route. He's, like, showing him how to kind of move in and out of a break and settle down. And then he taps him on his helmet, and it's a very kind of lighthearted. And it's interesting, the contrast with the clip everyone brings up with Matt Ryan of in a game when he says, get effing set. Point is, it's a very different energy when you get to the games, and that's when you've got to have it down pat. And that's when we see when guys are who guys really are at that point. But this is the time of year to not, you know, glorify mistakes. And that's why, like tracking the passing and in some of these settings, like Jets beat reporters will track every single throw thrown and then freak out about the accuracy numbers of rookie quarterbacks. And this is just the time of year to give a little bit of patience to everybody, because that's why they're out there. These aren't even, I can't even say the games don't count, because these aren't even games. These are just, it's just doodling.
Well, and one of the other things that we always talked about was there was a pattern. There's always a pattern with like OTAs and minicamp in the summer where somebody who's been around the team but hasn't done much for a while gets a lot of catches and looks really good, way better than you expected, and then they fizzle out in training camp. And the reason is simple: at this point of the game, they know more about the offense than everybody else. And then in training camp, when they're doing it every day for weeks on weeks on weeks, everybody else catches up to that, and then it becomes a talent thing. And so then the reason that they weren't playing before is a problem again. And there, I don't know if I've seen, we've only seen two practices. It's really hard for me to draw any conclusions from, you know, two separate practices. 3 days in a row is a little bit more helpful, but I don't know if I have anybody like that on the Colts, but I just think it's instructive in terms of, like, that's part of the reason there's always something that's going on in the summer that doesn't end up turning out that way, is because there's a chance for guys to catch up mentally. And when they catch up mentally, then it becomes about who's got better talent physically And sometimes that stuff starts to iron it out. The same thing is true of the defensive backs, is that they're taking advantage of young defensive backs who are learning for the first time because of their knowledge of the offense. And then those guys start to catch up and it gets harder for those guys to get open. So that's one of the things to do with that. I think one of the most, probably the most, the best development for the Colts is seeing Julian Blackman out there doing defensive back drills. And I mean, he lined up in 11. They're not doing anything in 11 on 11. Not really. They do stuff in 11 on 11, but at third speed. They're not walking, but it's not. Yeah. It's barely a jog pace.
Literally like a walkthrough.
But to have him out on the field and doing things, I think, is important for somebody coming off of an Achilles injury. It's a really good sign at this point in the summer.
It's impressive, too, because it's only been 7 months. And obviously it varies for each guy, but I just remember this often taking players about 12 months until they're kind of ready to be out there doing something. And it's an interesting spot with Blackman because, I mean, he's such a fascinating guy to talk to. We got 5 minutes with him, and it felt like 35 minutes because there's just so much personality and insight and positivity, but kind of a realness to him. And he's in an interesting spot, though, because on one hand, like, he feels like he really thinks he's good at rehabbing. Like, he thinks he showed that with the ACL rehab when he tore that in the bowl game and then was ready by week one of the season, played 16 of 17 games as a rookie. But the other hand of it is, like, he then had another injury here, and he's talking about, like, I've got to make sure, like, I've got to start looking at the long term where I don't have another injury. It's not about coming back from this one. It's about preventing the next one. And that's where I had a story out last night, and then I'll have another one on coming out here soon. I've been talking to Mike Mitchell lately, and one of the big reasons he got into coaching was he wanted to help players who were like him when he was young avoid the mistakes he made with the Raiders. And he was a second round pick who was a lot that goes into that. But one of the things that he felt like he messed up early on was coming back from injuries and trying to show everyone he's a tough guy and trying to just believe that his athletic traits would carry through everything. And when he loses a little bit of that and doesn't have the experience mentally, that's when you get into a dark place and start putting out some bad film that really kind of crushed his free agent hopes for a little bit. And with Julian Blackman, he sees they're so different personality wise and maybe their style. But what he sees is like the opportunity to do it again. Is Julian is he loves Julian, like his attitude in the building every day, how much he wants to learn. But he's trying to make it so that like this kid doesn't force himself back too early, because he believes Julian has a chance to be like a long time starter in this league. But it's two knee injuries in a couple years. And the one other thing I'd say about Julian, this is a side tangent, and I won't go on another soapbox with it, but it's interesting to me that how much scrutiny Paris Campbell gets. And I feel like we don't talk much about Julian Blackman, but they've both had basically the same career so far. They're both day two picks. I know Paris has played one more year in the league, but they've both had at least two major injuries that have knocked them out months. The big difference is just timing. Julian's happened in a bowl game, and his recovery was, you know, 6 months of an offseason, so he didn't miss games, whereas Paris gets hurt early in a season. But if Julian tears his ACL in week one of his rookie year, he's out the whole year. So it's just something to keep in mind, is that like all these, at the end of the day, health is luck, and you just do what you can to put yourself in the best position and come back at the right time. But it's still all luck. And as good as Julian was coming back to the ACL the first time, he still tore his Achilles. So it's just something to watch.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he does. His energy is kind of infectious. I think that's probably the best way to put it. It's like he's up, even when he comes in to talk to us, you know, he's just got a really positive, upbeat, kind of bouncy type of quality to him. And I think that's important. Beyond just his play, I think that there's a, like, you know, if he can stay on the field and be a factor here over the next couple of years, I think that that's the kind of thing that a defense can rally around. That's the kind of guy who doesn't get low when things get low, you know, and helps you reset. So I know the Colts have loved him for like ever since they drafted him. They've thought he could be a star ever since they drafted him. we've seen flashes of it. We saw flashes of it when he was a rookie. We were starting to see flashes of it last year before the Achilles tendon tear in practice. And I think everyone just wants to see what happens if you get a healthy Julian Blackman. Now, with Achilles tendons, it's always hard to know, like, is he going to have all of his powers at his disposal, that kind of thing. But that's a guy the Colts have been high on basically before they even made the pick.
And that's why I think this rehab is so critical for them, and why Mike Mitchell is so cautious with it right now, is I think they really believe they have something special and they've got to not screw it up. Like, they believe that much in his attitude, like you mentioned, just that bouncy spirit to learn. Like, he's so excited right now to rehab, like to do basic installs, the stuff that bores some veterans to tears, he's all about right now. So they believe, like, if they can get him on the field, if they can keep him on the field, all that's going to come together, and eventually he will be eventually that guy who starts adding all of these, all this game experience and the knowing what he's looking at and kind of being a resource for younger players. All of a sudden that helps create your culture for the long term for the entire defensive backfield. So they just are trying not to screw it up. None of it's going to matter if he's not on the field. So they have got to find a way to make this work. And I do think that, like, they also realize, like, in this defense, he is a very high ceiling, because this is the Gus Bradley's defense. Some of the best versions we've ever seen were when Derwin James was healthy and in Los Angeles, and when Earl Thomas was doing his thing on the back end in Seattle. And when you have that kind of superstar free safety, it changes a lot, and it lets you play single high safety and middle third and devote more resources into the box while only rushing four. Like, it lets you do all these kind of aggressive things where they used to, like, when I talk about guys installing the Seattle defense, they said, like, we look at it as playing offense on defense. Like, we're throwing our best strengths in your face. But the way to do it is that guy in the back end who is the way Julian described what he ultimately wants to be is, like, he's an eraser who also gets everybody right. So, like, if you make a mistake, he'll erase it for you. But he's also that guy that just, like, adds confidence to every single person to be their most aggressive selves on the front end. So there's a huge ceiling here for Julian Blackman. As we talk about, like, roles and how they change in this defense, guys like Kenny Moore, I think, are not going to be maybe as important as they were. Just the role itself is not as high on the pecking order in this defense as it was under Matt Eberflus. But free safety goes up another notch. And so they're just trying really hard not to screw it up with Blackman.
Although they are intrigued by Kenny Moore. Ron Miles said that a while back, that essentially kind of saying that he's got a skill set that they haven't seen, some of the stuff he can do near the line of scrimmage. So it will be interesting to see how, but you're right, the slot hasn't ever been as important there as it has been in, like, the Tampa 2 schemes, the Rondé Barber in Tampa, the way Kenny played with Flus. It'll be interesting to see what they do with that piece that they haven't had before. But it's hard to see any of that, number one, because Kenny's not out there right now, and number two, because they're not really doing any of the physical stuff that would go along with that.
And that's where it kind of gets us to another point we've discussed. But Kenny Moore's sort of mini holdout, whatever we want to call that, during voluntary practices, it's a weird time to do it, because, like, we don't know fully what his value can be in this defense. But so how can you hold out on that? What do you put a value on that yet? So that's where I've come down, that I just would be surprised if we see a new deal for Kenny Moore until we've at least had another year of him doing it. And maybe he adds something that's incredible that they haven't seen in this lot. And all of a sudden they realize, wow, this is, like, the advanced level of the defense, and we need this. The other guy I look at in that way is DeForest Buckner, because most of these Seattle guys, Gus Bradley especially, like, they've never really had that three technique who is that sort of versatile and disruptive, I guess you would say. But the scheme has had it. Like, they're going back to San Francisco and looking like the growth of Eric Armstead in San Francisco's defense and what that has added to make the 49ers kind of the model for that defense nowadays. A lot of that's what Eric Armstead can do up front. DeForest did a little bit of it his rookie year there. So those are two guys to really watch, is, like, what do they add to this? Because those two positions, under Matt Eberflus, those may be the two most important positions behind, you know, like you think like Darius, it was always Darius Leonard, DeForest Buckner, and Kenny Moore. And it was like everything else fell off a cliff after that. I think in this defense, there's a world where maybe in a couple of years we're talking, or maybe even like next year, we're talking like the most important positions are still Darius Leonard, but Yannick Ngakoue and Julian Blackman, just based on the potential of those roles if those guys hit it. But then we'll see how Kenny Moore and DeForest Buckner add into that, because those are two Pro Bowl players who may just carve out a new set of value for them that these coaches have never really seen before.
Yeah, and Buckner obviously was really good playing for Sala in this defense. So he does have experience in it. But so much of that, like, this is bad for the pod and bad for our coverage next week. But like, I'm at the point where I just need to get to training camp. I need it to be real.
Like, you ready for vacation?
Well, I'm ready for vacation, but also it's hard at this point for me to draw any conclusions off of what I'm seeing. And that just makes me like ready for Grand Park. It makes me ready to like see actual football going on. Start seeing guys progress over the time. One of the biggest things for me is just being able to see practice after practice after practice, so you know that what you're seeing isn't a one-day thing. And like, we don't, even next week, 3 days isn't enough. They haven't done much 11-on-11, so there's not a whole lot we can take from what we do. And so that this, we've reached the point in the summer that happens to me every year where I'm like, I sort of understand all the theoretical stuff of this, and I just want to see it all put into action. And we've got 3 days of practice next week, 3 days of coverage. We'll probably do a little bit more beyond that, but it is. I just being full out and admitting it to podcast listeners, like, there's a part of me that's like, this is not real enough. Let's do our vacation and get to training camp where the football is like the way it needs to be.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I will say I'm enjoying this time of year. I kind of like going 1 day a week and just chilling. Like it yesterday was pretty hot, so I'm not ready for that heat of training camp yet. But give me a little break in July. I'll come back fired up. But I hear you. And mostly, but usually this time of year is not that fun. I will say this year's just the addition of Matt Ryan to me has changed the interest level of everything. It's like seeing how that affects a building and just how it kind of pulls them out of the spot they were in this entire offseason of quarterback purgatory. And so the other new additions, though, yeah, we got to get to training camp to see, because like, it's going to be fun to see Stephon Gilmore get in the grill of Michael Pittman and see some of those actual legitimate one-on-ones with where defensive back has a little bit more of a chance. Like, Stephon Gilmore's not doing any of that right now. And Yannick Ngakoue, it'd be fun to see him in some of the one-on-one settings. He hasn't even been out there yet because he's in Florida working with his trainer like he often does. There's a lot of things that'll be much more revealing in training camp. Right now, though, it's talking theory, and it'll be just interesting. Like, next week we'll be in the mini camp, and that's where we'll see if Kenny Moore practices, and that's when the fines kick in. So if the guys, that's where it gets interesting, because it's like, if it's about money, do you risk money? And we'll see kind of, but yeah, it's like you were joking before we started this that like, Kenny Moore is like the most like outward personality in this secondary right now, which is kind of funny. It's just a bunch of like, and that's not like, it says everything about the group, because Kenny, I mean, this is like the softest holdout you'll ever see. Kindest holdout you'll ever see, I guess, if it's even a holdout, but it's just like that's added one little bit of a wrinkle to what otherwise is a secondary of just really like nice guys who seem excited to play together.
Yep. We'll be back next week, probably after the mini camp. I think would probably be the best thing to do. Wait till we have 3 days of observations, and then that'll probably be the send-off podcast for us before the break. But we'll be back next week to talk about what we see at mini camp, what we hear at mini camp. For the Colts Cover 2 podcast, this has been Joel A. Erickson and Nate Atkins. We will be back for the end of the Colts offseason program next week.